Hello, everybody. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, whenever you are watching or listening. If you want to watch, you can watch us on our YouTube channel, The Suala Adelies, or you can listen to some podcast wherever you may listen to your podcast. Mark's taking his temperature, something he does quite a lot, but we're not really going to explain that. We're just going to let that be. We were supposed to start this podcast about 25 minutes ago, but Mark's been playing fly badminton.
So if you hear a fly in the background, I do apologise. Mm. That's it. Welcome to How to Stay Married. So far. What are we doing?
Mark doesn't know what we're doing today. Now, I do not have a strict algorithm feeding me only things that a six-year-old woman would see, because I dart about all over the place.
So do you actively agitate your algorithm?
I agitate my algorithm. I follow age groups that I wouldn't necessarily be... In fact, I don't follow many people of my age. So I get all sorts of things sent to me, and I love that. But my God, Mark, the Gen Zs are on it.
Gen Zs are the most recent. No, Generation no. Alpha is under 15. No. So yeah, our kids.
But you know, right up to 30, I think.
Right.
But anyway, they've got life sorted. I saw a whole article the other day.
Are you in shot?
Yeah.
You've just moved around a lot.
Well, my chin might be a bit close to the bottom, but I'm back up. I'm sitting
back
up.
Oh yeah, but you're going to move.
It doesn't matter. You're a mover.
I can't move. I'm trapped.
Just stay where you are. If our heads are different sizes, I'm sure they'll forgive us.
Oh, it's so annoying.
Mark, okay. This is a podcast that we happen to put on YouTube.
No.
It's not a movie.
Something on YouTube that happens to be a podcast.
Oh, sorry. Well, you could have lit me a bit better then, and I could have had some hair and makeup.
Oh, my God.
Anyway. So
Gen Zers.
The other day, I saw this article of a Gen Zer that said, I tried to have the sleeping habits of a baby boomer, and it nearly killed me for 1 week. So this Gen Zer goes to bed, and so do all her friends, at 9 o'clock in the evening, having had a light supper at 5, so that she digested all her food by the time she got into bed.
What baby boomer does
that? She tried to drink like a baby boomer, and she thought she was going to have to be hospitalised. We're the baby boomers, by the way. So they're just very pure. They're much more pure than us. They're much more clean. They're much more bloody sensible. So
right.
I got served up by the algorithm this post, and it said, 4 uncomfortable questions you should ask yourself before you enter into a relationship.
Well, that's no use to ask, is it? We're in
no,
it.
No, but I thought, God, this would be so funny to show that generation, because actually, though a lot of it does sound very fucking boring, they're very sensible. I'm also got huge admiration for them as well.
One of my observations of all of this is a gross generalisation, obviously. There's a whole bunch of Gen Zers who are going to be in Hyde Park for any minute now, getting stoned out of their faces. What I've noticed with a lot of Gen Zers, though, or a lot of younger... There's the fly. With a lot of younger people is they're very administrative. They write a lot of things down. They like
journaling.
To jot.
Journaling is good for you.
Is it?
Yep. Never managed it myself.
Are we going to journal? I've got a journal app, and I get alerts telling me...
To write your journal.
Write something now about, and then it tells you where you've been, what photographs you've taken, to try and trip you into writing something.
Maybe I should try that.
I quite like it. I started, but I did one.
Because we've both given up with Duolingo.
Duolingo's got nothing to do with journaling. It's not a language thing.
No, I know, but we did Duolingo every day for 455 days.
Yeah, but we didn't speak any more Spanish. We did it for the streak.
We couldn't speak a fucking word of French by the end of it, but we gave that time to
French.
Duolingo. So, Mark,
we did Spanish.
You did Spanish, I did French.
Right. That's why
Kiki
we couldn't
wanted
speak
to learn
to each
French.
Other. Classic. It was of no use whatsoever.
Very un-Gen Z. We would have learned together and then taken a regular weekend trips to said country to practice what we'd learned.
What's happening to you? What are you talking about?
Anyway,
said country. Okay,
said
so what
country,
are we doing?
Origin of the language you're learning.
I got it.
So I thought it'd be quite funny if we took a little retrospective look back and how good it would have been for us, maybe or maybe not, to have asked ourselves these 4 uncomfortable questions before we entered into a relationship.
Crikey. Can I just pause?
But of course, we will have to then explain how we did enter our relationship.
But asking any question before entering a relationship sounds incredibly responsible and sort of sensible.
But you're not in a relationship, you're only asking yourself.
No, I know, but who in their right mind is going to sit down and ask themselves a checklist of questions before they go on a date or consider romantically
getting
involved?
Well, you know what? If our girls had maybe had some earlier initial relationships, right? And they'd had a breakup. I would probably not sit down and answer these questions, but I would probably say, you know, I'd say to them, you know, one of the big mistakes I've made in my life was I went from one relationship to another with very little break in between, right? And if I had my time again, I would have had more single time. And if I'd had my time again, I would have just investigated a bit more what had gone on and what, you know, was I ready? So in a way, I've learned that having got to 60.
Here's a killer question.
But I wouldn't say sit down and ask yourself these questions.
If you'd allowed yourself, and we'll get onto the questions, but if you'd allowed yourself in the broadest of brushstrokes that time between, say, before meeting me, maybe we wouldn't have got together there.
Well, there's no perfect solutions here.
Because maybe an irrational, complicated, messy, quite distressing and dysfunctional kind of tripping into a relationship, the beautiful disaster, as we describe it, could be the way forward for some.
Classic Mark, he's given away the ending at the beginning.
Is that the ending?
Yes, because we were going to start and then we were going to say how we did get into
it. Well, I'm not. I don't necessarily think it's like... Okay, hit us with the
questions. I had a plan and he didn't know it's basically... Sorry. So, right. If... Try and take yourself back.
Oh, God, okay.
Right? And ask yourself this question.
Yes.
Have I developed a strong sense of self-worth and self-love independently of a relationship?
So hang on, where am I?
Just before you're going to go in a relationship with me.
So 33. 30, no, how old was I? 30.
I can answer this for you. No.
No, I'm just trying to cast my mind back.
No.
God, you've done a spoiler of my own answer. No, I mean categorically not. Were you?
No.
This isn't going to last long, is it?
Do I feel comfortable about who I am and sure of who I want to be?
No.
Were you comfortable with who you wanted to be? Maybe you... I think you had ambitions of who you want. Not jobs, not work, but who you wanted to be.
Yes. Yeah, well, explain a bit more so
I can
understand.
Well, so for instance, I would say that you weren't, when I met you, you'd been a player, you'd been an unfaithful person, you'd done a lot of gadding about. And I think that you wanted something other than that.
Yes, I agree.
But you didn't know even how to begin to imagine it because you were in so much chaos.
Yeah, I didn't know that what was required to achieve it was everything in question one, which was self-worth and self-love.
Self-love, I think, is huge. I don't think anyone can say self-love.
Does anyone really have self-love?
I think...
Do they?
I think there's a real problem with self-love. And I'll tell you why. It sounds insurmountable that for anyone that is struggling.
I'm pleased you say that because it speaks to something that I was talking about in a couple of lives I did this week with Kaz and Lee. I think there is I think there's something about all of the kind of social media chat and advice and memes and all this stuff, podcasts, all that stuff, that puts enormous pressure on us to sort of think that there is a solution or that there is some kind of absolute aspirational goal, a sort of sweet spot that we can all get to. And I think I feel like part of what we try and do is to try and kind of actually remove the kind of rose-tinted glasses around where your destination is with mental health or self-love or self-worth, because we are forever flowing and we are forever going to have a day that's bad and then a day that's good. And it's about trying to, and I think some of the best things I've received from my most recent sort of therapy is the idea that we can't change the good and bad, but we can change how much damage it does to you and how much you let it in and don't let it in. And when you do let it in too much, how you can try and sort of curtail the self-harm or the upset. So,
I think what's dangerous is that people imagine that there is a destination and you get off.
Precisely.
And you're on the platform of self-love. And what I'm always just so terrified of using the word.
Which?
But it is a word I've got to use.
What? Moist?
No. What the fuck?
I don't know. I just...
Journey.
Oh.
No, I know. I'm sorry. But it is. And it's a never-ending journey. And it's jumping in and out of pools of happiness or a puddle of self-worth or a bit of love. Self-love. So if somebody's going, oh, my God, I don't love myself... And also, as Brits, we find it very difficult to say love myself.
Yes, yes, yes.
There's a whole huge thing. But I think it's about starting to respect that your desires are valid. That's what I would say. We've been watching, we've both been mad about Married at First Sight Australia. And if anybody's watching that, I think Lucinda, the character Lucinda, is a perfect example of that. Mm. She's been through a very difficult early years. She's had a really difficult time. And she is a woman
I'm just having an out-of-body experience.
Why?
I don't know. I'm looking at you, but things are morphing. You know, when you look at someone talking and it all goes
probably
a bit...
Probably just you're bored.
No, I'm not bored. Bored? No, bored, I'm not bored at all. No, no, I'm really interested, but I feel like...
Well, I'm glad you're interested, because now you stopped me right in the middle.
No, Lucinda. No, we're talking about Lucinda. No, I agree. Oh, sorry.
So this character, she has got to a place... You don't feel, oh, Lucinda loves herself, but she has learnt to respect herself and to be able to ask for what she wants. So that's what I think love, self-love is. And I didn't have that when I first met you. My answer to this question would be no. But I'd been given something with my childhood. Mm. I'd been held. I had a really good mum and dad. With their faults, but I knew that I was worth something.
That surely...
And I was chaotic off that, yes. But it meant that I could come back to it if I chose to.
I think that's a really good analogy. And I think what you're sort of talking about there is you had a sort of foundation. Stability. Well, yeah, and a foundation of stability from which you could go on sort of missions and sorties of madness, but you could always land back in the lap.
As my dad said, your whole brain and your whole being was blancmange until 5 years ago.
I mean, my analogy...
5 years ago?
My analogy with all of it is like, think of the London Underground map. It's the Circle Line. I've always been fascinated by the Circle Line because it never ends. You get on a train, you could just stay on it.
It's the journey.
It's the journey, and it goes on, and it goes on. And yet... You get on the Circle Line in London and you are going to a destination. It's just that destination will be different. It will be somewhere else on that circle. And I think it's a really important thing. So this idea of self-love in a relationship. Outside of a relationship. Here's my concern. I think if I was a self-loving, self-worthy, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but sort of, you know, knew my worth, happy, clappy kind of...
Oh. You see, this is the problem. No, this is the way Brits talk about it as soon as you go to self-love.
No, but if I was all those things, which I think
Why do you have to be all those things?
No. But they're all really desirable and
admirable.
No,
you're saying them like they're totally wanky.
I'm wanky
Mark,
for me.
You
wanky
are sounding like you think they're wanky.
No, I don't think
if
they're wanky.
If you think you're sounding like you agree with any of it, you're not.
My journey with Lucinda... on Married at First Sight has been a curious one.
Yeah, because you were very reluctant.
At first, I said, I want to run for the hills.
You had right armpit, you had everything.
But she's given me a really important lesson, because I think we can sometimes not see what the qualities are of a partner because one's living it in such close-up. So I'm with you, we go through so much together. I've managed to see, in the way she's been with the partner, without going too... I don't want to go into the detail of this, because you might not have watched it anymore. But the way she's helped this guy, or held this guy... that she's trying to kind of develop a relationship with. It's really made me reflect on a lot of the things that you've done for me and how you've held me across the years. And it's really made me appreciate that in a very different way.
Thank you.
And it's also reminded me how that concept of someone being able to hold you, one can feel deeply suspicious about it if you haven't had that stability.
Exactly.
So I think my problem in all
and
of my...
And she had lovely parents.
Precisely. And it's not that I didn't have a lovely... You know, my mum was lovely and my nan and granddad were great, but it was chaotic. It wasn't stable in the way that normal stability is.
It was neglectful in a lot of ways.
Yeah, exactly. And one just kind of... I just kind of navigated my own route through it all in a very sort of confused fashion. And so... I don't think if I'd had self-worth or self-love or any of these kind of sort of anchoring qualities, I don't know whether I'd have entered any of the relationships I entered into.
Well, and then maybe none of the relationships you entered into were right for you. Maybe
but
you
I don't
fell
think
into
I'd have entered
them,
into ours.
Even the one with me.
Yeah, no, but at that time it wouldn't have been right. So it's weird this, because then of course you go into the panic of thinking, oh my God, what if I had been well? We wouldn't have met and it wouldn't have been right. And then it was like, well, thank God I was a mess. Thank God we were both messes, because otherwise we wouldn't have together.
You keep giving away the ending.
That's true. What's the next question? Is that question one and two?
That was two questions in question one. Next, do I have the time and the energy to invest in building and maintaining a relationship?
Right.
I think both of us absolutely did, I would say.
I think
we
I've
did
always
have
the intent.
Because we always make the time.
But I also think I would honestly say this, that outside of the sort of... what would you call them? You know, very short-term flings and...
One-night stands.
Yeah. Wherever there was a sort of meaningful relationship that took form, I had every intention and desire for it to want to work.
I wasn't one of those, committed.
Like you, I've never been one of those people who gets into a relationship.
I'm just dating someone now. It's like, if I saw somebody more than once, it meant that there was a complete possibility of a total future.
It's everything. I don't understand these people who say things like, well, I'm with him, but definitely not until my mid-20s. I'm like...
He's definitely not the one.
That's like a dark diagnosis.
I know, it's weird. Maybe it's because we're both Scorpio and both ADHD.
So well, it's the loyalty thing. So I think I've always had the... What was the question again? Have you got the intention and the what?
Do you have the time and energy to invest in building and maintaining a relationship?
Right, okay. I've had the intention. Have I had the energy? I think I have had the energy.
Yeah. But I think it's a simple yes.
And what was the other one? The time. I haven't allowed myself the time.
No, you keep getting it wrong.
Sorry.
This is you are not in a relationship and you're asking yourself the question.
Right.
And I think if you were asking yourself, you would have said yes.
I would have said yes.
And then, will I be able to prioritise someone else's emotional wants, needs alongside my own?
I would have liked to have thought I could, but I absolutely don't think I would have been able to. But if I asked myself that question, I think. Hang on, here's a problem with this whole fucking escapade. Asking these questions of yourself in a hypothetical situation where you're before you're in a relationship and all this.
Yeah, but this is for Gen Zers who are thinking about going into a relationship.
But I think
that's who we're talking to.
But I think a lot of people can be very arrogant about themselves and they'll say yes to that.
Yeah,
but actually, just because you say yes doesn't mean you can.
Yeah, but stop fucking splitting hairs.
That's not a hair split.
No, Mark, shut up.
It's not.
You're going off on a tangent. We're not talking about people that might say it. We're saying we're in ourselves.
Well, I think a lot of Gen Z
investigating these questions.
But I think what I'm saying is you could delude yourself. You could answer in the affirmative, but be utterly incapable of
doing
it.
You could say that about every single question. But I think the point here is that there is a difference. That I think we were done a service and a disservice, our generations, that we didn't even think we could ask these questions of ourselves, that we didn't even think we could know what to ask for or want. You know, we very much fell into almost every relationship we had, didn't we?
Yes.
And it was like, I hope what we've given our girls is that they're constantly building on all this stuff. So it's not a point of stopping and pausing and considering and asking these questions. I hope that they're ever evolving into, you know, young women who have a sense of self, have a sense of what's the right and wrong way to be treated, have an ability to know that they can walk away and they will be held and would be supported. And even if, say, we suddenly disappeared off the face of the earth, they would still be able to walk away with their heads held high and say, this isn't right for me because I have a deep sense of who I am and what I want.
Yes.
I think if we'd split up a few months after we'd met, we would have walked away and we would have just been more chaotic and we would have fallen into something else that was messy. I don't think we were too strong. I'd had terrible
trauma
before. You had had a traumatic life. We were both drinking like fucking nutcases. We were not well.
No.
We were not emotionally, mentally, or probably even physically well.
Yes.
And yet I think it was graft and another level that was going on in us that brought us together and kept us together. But I think we're lucky.
Well,
I was going to say that's actually. Why everyone at our wedding was saying this won't last. They were right to think that.
Yeah.
We proved them wrong, but they were right to think that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And but sometimes I sort of think, you know, aren't all these questions the things that you're maybe not, they're not on a list on a piece of paper that you're ticking off and going through and answering directly, but aren't these the kind of things that one is passing through one or is filtering through one?
No, I was all impulse and instinct. I wasn't ever asking.
I agree, but this goes back to something we were talking about earlier today with one of our kids. And this is the idea that we do live in a time where there is so much more language and reflection, which is why it's important that you've pulled this up and say this is and have said this is an example of Gen Z kind of doing this kind of audit almost of their emotions.
Good word.
Because in doing that, I think sometimes I think there's the plus and there's the negative. And I think it's easy for us older people to go, oh, you're removing all of the impulse. You're removing all of the just falling into things and all that kind of stuff. But actually, you could look back at the kind of chaos and carnage of the vast majority of relationships that came from our era, if you like. And when I say that, that doesn't mean that lots of people can point to people who've stayed together, but sometimes of a different era have stayed together at what cost? I mean, if I look at even my grandparents, you know, these weren't relationships. This was just convention. This wasn't relationships that were meant to be. They just had to happen, and they had to get on with it and make it work. And I think there's an important distinction between feeling like you have to just get on and make a relationship work and doing what we did, which was we want this relationship to work and then getting on and working at it.
We had a baby.
Yeah, but and that flagged up many other concerns
deep,
in different ways.
Deep in our souls, we...
The response... I'm going to say something quite...
If we
never
hadn't
said
have
this
had
before.
Maddie, we wouldn't have stayed together.
When we had Maddie, it threw me into... It was triggered. Both the making and the triggering of the worst moment in my life. And on the one hand, I threw myself into the darkest state of fear, because I had two children already. I was like, oh my God, is the same fucking thing going to play out again? Where I'm unable to meet this. I knew this was different. And then coming through the rock bottom and the trauma and everything else, it was then absolutely, I would say, like you say, the making of us and the making of me. Within that trauma and within that mess and within the car crash that I smashed into a wall, we both did in our own respective ways because we were both drawn to each other. Within that was the DNA of our recovery. But you're right, it's so fucking rare. It's so rare to be able to get through what you've
got. And it has been really, really hard.
And it still is.
Yeah.
At times, I recognise that. It still is. And, you know, I mean, if we were to ask these questions, if we weren't together now, would you answer these questions differently to what you were before? Say we separated or I died.
I can't know that because I don't know what was my, you know, where I am now at 60 this year. I've just got a lot of life experience, haven't I? But I would hope so. But I don't think so. I think our relationship has been a relationship where it's been a 20-year conversation. And people might go, well, isn't every marriage? No, people stop conversing quite early on in a lot of relationships. So we've had a relationship of discovery, and your intense period of discovery because of going to rehab and all of that, it, of course, spilled out on me. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been fast-tracked into thinking differently and looking at what my, you know, what I wanted and who I was and all of that.
What's the final question?
That's not the final one.
Oh. I said,
we can do these two quickly.
No. Sorry, I thought we were on question. I'm confused.
Have I considered how my past experiences with love and relationships may influence my current attitudes and behaviours? Now, I think this is really, really important. And this is what I always do say to younger people. And we've said in other podcasts, actually, when we've talked about breakups, is that it is essential, even if the person that you were with was the most awful person in the world and everybody else said it too, you also have to look at where you were culpable. Mm. It may be the simple thing of, why do I keep choosing the same person? I'm culpable in this because I keep choosing the same person with a different name, with the same behaviours, and end up feeling the same way and end up feeling treated the same. So unless you give yourself time in between, and I remember when we were first together and I was like, really, like, I don't know if I want to do this, it was because I was starting to get a sense of that all my relationships had gone one to one to one to one, and the relationship before you had been a very difficult one, and I hadn't had time to process, and I'd gone into that difficult relationship because something really tragic had happened to me before that, and I was just starting to get the sense of, if I go into another one now, who am I? And I've had this sense and this fear of losing myself. I didn't know at that time how, I think because when I very first met you, I thought, this is somebody, which is what you are, that is really smart and really capable and really skilled and really hardworking. And maybe for once I can lean into them and be a bit sort of looked after emotionally. And then when I started to see that also you were, in like me, not in a good place, that was the first time I'd ever been scared for myself. You were still lovely, but I was like, and I'm not talking about this really even thought, there was something instinctive going on in me that said, I can't do another relationship where I'm looking after somebody, where I'm rescuing somebody because that's my illness.
Do you feel you've managed to find that self back? Have you managed to kind of, do you still feel like you're in that fog of fear?
In what way?
Well, can I, you know, because I mean, we're very codependent. We pull each other up. We look at, you know, you're very emotionally intelligent, so you can really read me and read, you know, do you feel you were right to be fearful, or are you pleased?
No. I was right to be fearful.
Mm.
And at times it's been so hard. And as I said, you know, with our lowest times, if it wasn't being for Maddie, I would have absolutely run for the hills because I couldn't cope with it. I was just losing myself so completely, and I was so unhappy, and I was just, I didn't know what to do, and I had nobody to ask, and I had no...
Sorry, sweetie.
No, but that's all right. It wasn't because you were nasty. It was because you weren't well.
Mm.
And then, so, but the thing is with us, it's like all shit or all sugar, you know, like when we are good, there is just nobody that I'd prefer to spend even a minute with instead. Do you know what I mean? But there is no doubt about it. You having bipolar and having depression is hard. But it's also, I can't separate that from the things that I love about you.
Now, one thing I wanted to say off the back of
if
what
somebody
you were...
laid it all out on a script and said, well, this is going to do it, then you're going to find out that, you
I
know,
couldn't do it again.
That that Mark was an alcoholic, then you're going to find out that it was this and that. I was going, oh God, I'm not going to be able to deal with that. But it's not like
no,
that,
life
is it?
Life isn't like that.
Life isn't like that. Life unfolds.
It's the circle line.
It's the journey.
Yeah.
And I think if you've got a fundamental, like I've always said to you, and actually Lucinda says this in Married for Such, because I saw your heart. And I've always said that about you.
Do you like my jam?
I like your jam.
You like my jam.
I'd always seen your, and I've always known your heart. So even when things have been really difficult, you know, it's always pumping.
What I wanted to say on this, which I think is really important to say.
We can keep all that in.
Yeah. I would go so far as to say this is what I've learned somewhat in life through difficult experience myself in some of the relationships I've been in. Anyone who thinks in any sort of difficult period or conflict or issue that's going on within a relationship, and I don't mean at the extreme end of, you know, control and domestic abuse and all that, I'm not going that far. But if you're in a troubled relationship, a relationship that's not succeeding, a relationship where there's a lot of blame game stuff going on, that relationship is never going to work if any one of the two parties truly thinks they're blameless.
Yeah.
If you go into, no matter what, even if it's like your philandering partner is doing it again and again and again, if you go into any kind of negotiation, couples therapy, or any attempt to kind of bridge things, or even when you come out and live your life with children separated from each other, to just hold one person responsible for everything is
must
not...
Just caveat that again, excluding coercive, controlling,
course.
Or bullying relationships.
Of course,
decent people.
Yeah, I'm talking about the sort of normal cut and thrust of relationships, married or divorced or separating, or why is that happening? Where is the breakdown in communication? One of the massive breakdowns of communication, one of the massive breakdowns of relationships, is the absolute disbelief in some halves of a partnership that they are utterly blameless for the situation. Because it can be that, like Neddy just said, you are purposefully drawing yourself or drawing people in of a certain type. You are, you know, we've said it many times before, you can be engaging and having relationships that converge on a form of self-harm because you're getting something from it. You might want to be, again, not in the extreme examples, you might want to be in a relationship where actually your sort of modus operandi is to moan or to complain or to feel victimized. And, you know, so many relationships I see or I hear about, I think, God, if only you could both share the spoils of responsibility, because in that are the spoils of recovery.
I think sometimes people have to be really honest and think, is why I am finding fault in every single way with this person because not actually that they've got 1,000 faults, but actually I don't want them anymore.
Well, there is that too.
Because I think sometimes people are finding lots of faults because they just don't want, if you really don't want your partner anymore, you have to face that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So last question, do I have a clear, remember, you're not in the relationship. Do I have a clear vision, OK, going back to 33 years old, of the kind of partner I want to be. Ah, I've always had a clear vision on that. And I'm willing to work on myself to become that person. I would say yes to half of that question and no to the other half. Yes, I did have a clear vision of the kind of partner I wanted. No, I didn't even know what the work was. I was like, for somebody that was quite sort of anti-marriage and very sort of feminist when I was younger and very like, I don't need a man, I also had quite a romantic idea that you would meet somebody and it would all just work out. That's what I thought.
Right.
And I think that is the... I think you're supposed to think that when you're younger, aren't you? You're supposed to think you're just going to meet somebody, it's all going to work out. That's part of being young. Mind you, I wasn't young when I met you.
No.
How old was I?
39.
Seven.
No, 37. No, I was 30. You were 37. Ask the question again. I just want to remember the two different distinctions.
Do I have a clear vision of the kind of partner I want to be? So like when you were growing up, you imagined yourself.
I did.
What was your, what did you imagine?
Well, a supportive, a present, a caring, considerate,
an
available father.
Is it what
and husband or partner? Yes.
Good.
But, and what was the second bit?
Am I willing to work on myself to become that person?
So, I had a clear vision of what kind I wanted to be. I
had no idea.
Only in retrospect now realise I had none of the building blocks of knowing how to create that because I hadn't actually really, actually really seen it in one place or in one person. I've always used the analogy of
did you have any idea that you were going to have to do some work?
Had zero comprehension that I would have to do any work.
Right.
But I think the journey of recovery and sobriety and our journey, I think it very much started at the point of my rock bottom and it's still evolving now. That it is a process of what is required to get to being that kind of person. And again, going, you know, wishing to invoke all of the stuff of recovery, I don't think it's a destination point. I think it's something I am always thinking about. I mean, to this day, I'm thinking in terms of, whilst it's hard for us to pin down dates, I'm thinking, would that be a nice... This is a kind of, you know, very sort of literal example. But
domestic.
I am thinking about things like, you know, oh, would it be nice to take Nads to see that? It would be really nice if we went here or if we did that. I'm still in and of that sort of part of our relationship where I want to be someone who's providing stimulation and new horizons and things like that. And I also want to be better at hearing when I'm not hitting on certain things.
I think we sort of accidentally, just because of who we are, though we're very similar, we're very unalike. So that you just described of yourself is very you. And I am very I'm a very sort of nurturing, homey sort of, they're not completely, I mean, I'm a total raver, and I think we just, if we were both people that were constantly the both, you know how people can get really competitive about, you know, deciding what you're going to do or da-da-da. We're neither of us are like that. We're quite happy to follow the other one in whatever the other one's thing is. Do you know what I mean?
I had a lifetime of not being able to trust the emotional ground beneath my feet.
You're still like that.
I have spent 20 years...
I still say to him, after 20 years of making things that he loves, I'll say, would you like lunch?
And go,
only if you're making something for you. I'd hate that.
At the age of 53, when all of the most formative emotional foundations were incredibly confusing, often distressing, very, very anxiety-inducing, you know, and all this kind of stuff, I think... I sometimes look at where I'm at and I think, wow, it has taken, yes, admittedly, a long time for me to start to trust things. And you could argue, why didn't you trust? There's a moment again in Married at First Sight where Tim said, I've wasted all this time. I don't want to see it like that because I could say exactly the same thing. I've wasted so much time, not in not having been with you or had what we've got, but not having just sat in it and enjoyed it more rather than forever worrying that this isn't for me, this isn't for real, this isn't going to stay. And that feeling isn't even just about imposter syndrome because I don't actually think I have true imposter syndrome. I think I have, it's been regulated and instilled in me, or what has been or was, just the idea that things don't last. And changeability is constantly happening. And that's that nervous sense of something new, something new. What's going to take this away? Something's going to take this. I can't afford to let myself settle. And that's always, if that is the catch-all for every single thing that I've done wrong and done right, I think, in my life, I'm just getting to that point where I trust. And it's a nice feeling.
It's brilliant. You see, I've got my mum and dad next door. My mum's 87, my dad's 90. Mm. And they're still together. And they still make each other laugh. And they
absolutely.
Still, so
like kids.
I've got that.
Yes.
Because I do trust.
Yeah.
And the worst thing for me, one of the worst things for me in our whole relationship, and was just so awful for many of the first years, was and I used to say to you, you've got no idea what a gift it is for somebody to say they trust you. I know, that's fine. To say that they trust you in the way that I do, and you couldn't trust. You couldn't trust. No. But I understand it now.
Yeah.